Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer, your host for this week's show. Whether you support it or oppose it, it's clear that the border protest in Alberta has disrupted the province's cattle industry. Some feedlots have been running short of feed, and slaughter plants are struggling to transport product across the border into the U.S. Alberta Premier Jason Kenney has ended the province's vaccine passport system, but protesters might be sticking around. On today's episode, we'll speak with a reporter who has been covering the border protest since it began.
Right now, I mean, the protesters on the ground are, you know, it doesn't matter what government announcement happens about future ending of regulations. They say they're committed on staying there until the pandemic restrictions are lifted.
Also, the global cattle industry has larger problems, as many people now believe that cows are the main cause of climate change. An Alberta scientist wants to rebalance the debate over cows by providing factual information about cows and the health of the planet.
We're picking contentious issues and trying to give both sides of the story so that there's better information for people to make their own decisions.
But before we begin, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
You know, not all nitrogen works as hard as I do. My ESN polymer coating means I can stay out in the field longer, up to 80 days. Those other guys? First hot wind or heavy rain and they're out. They're scared of soil bacteria and standing water too. But not me. It's why ESN is the leading controlled-release nitrogen in broadacre agriculture. See for yourself. Just check out smartnitrogen.com.
First up, Alex McQuaig, a reporter with the Western Producer in Medicine Hat, has spent most of the last 10 days covering the protests near the U.S. border in Alberta. Like many Canadians, Alex isn't sure when this protest will end, but it's clear to him that the protest is different from what's happening in Ottawa. I spoke to Alex on February 8th around lunchtime, so the situation at the border may have changed.
We know that there's been an impact from the protest on Alberta's livestock industry. Can you just talk about that a bit? What have you learned about the consequences of this protest?
So it's not exactly clear economic impacts. There's feedlot operators right now that are already struggling with getting feed to their cattle. The larger, the more acute the problem is. The larger the feedlot, the more acute the problem is. Shipments are coming up, grain are coming up from the States on train, but there's a lot of feed, such as distillers' dried grain, which a lot of that comes up north by commercial trucking. Canned packs, I mean, for the week ending January 15th, was reporting a 118% increase in live cattle shipments south. It's not clear exactly what JBS and Cargill are doing with their production. Hearing a lot of talk of it's been slowed down, and that will, how slow that will get is dependent on what happens at the border this week for sure. And it's going to impact people, whether they're feeling it right now today, maybe not, but there's a lot of space in those feedlots that, you know, there are a lot of pens that were expected to be empty this month might have be occupied a bit longer, and that just compounds some of the issues.
Right. So the point being is that if you're a feedlot operator and Cargill or JBS are not buying animals for slaughter right now because they reduce their capacity for whatever reason, then you're stuck with a larger herd for a longer time in a situation where feed costs are high or there's not feed available. So it's a really difficult situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And you're already dealing with, on the trucking side, you're already dealing with some issues. I mean, it's a, on the trucking side, I mean, even before the new cross-border pandemic restrictions came into effect, I mean, you're dealing with the increased regulatory regime that came out of the Humboldt crash. So you've already got, you know, an extra layer of paperwork to do there. And then you've got this added issue of a shortage or the existing shortage of drivers. And then on top of that, you have another hurdle to the trucking industry with the mandates for cross-border travel right. and the need for vaccinations of truckers.
So you've been reaching out to some agriculture groups, groups that represent the beef industry and the livestock industry, but it seems like some of these groups are reluctant to comment on the protest. What's your sense of why that is?
Well, I think in the agricultural sector, I mean, they've gone through a lot with both the drought and the pandemic. They want to get back to a sense of normalcy, at least, you know, at least only having to deal with one problem at one time, not a multitude of issues. You know, there's definitely a support for getting rid of the mandates. You know, I wouldn't say the producer organizations in any stretch of imagination are fully backing this blockade at Coutts. I think they see that this has impacts to the industry at large, but at the same time, they understand that producers are, and they sympathize with the fact that producers want this situation with the pandemic restrictions to end. So, you know, they're kind of caught in the middle there. I mean, they see the effects, but they also need to represent their producers as well. And so it's a tough, I think they're trying to thread the needle there on how to deal with this issue.
Okay. Well, the conversation now in Ottawa and I guess the other protests going on around the country is, you know, how does this end? How does this protest or this scenario end in a peaceful manner? Does anybody in Alberta have that answer?
I don't think so. And it's not just how this ends. It's what I'll be looking for is what happens when the next protest group comes down and might look at Coutts as a place they might want to look at to stage their protest. Right now, I mean, the protesters on the ground are, you know, it doesn't matter what government announcement happens about future ending of regulations. They say they're committed on staying there until the pandemic restrictions are lifted. So regardless of what happens, we've got Premier Jason Kenney expected to talk today about the timelines. The protest groups down there are saying, regardless of what he says, they're down there until the mandates are lifted. And so that seems to be the end point of this, but I'll be looking at the issues in long term as well, because there are groups that might see this as a blueprint to how to get government to act, and whether it's because of public health restrictions or because of land claims or because of environmental policy, you know, it's endless. But what will likely be different is that, you know, this protest really is being well supported by the local population. So we'll see in the future. But there's some issues here that I think will last for a long time going forward.
Okay. Thanks, Alex. I've been speaking with Alex McQuigg, a reporter with the Western Producer in Medicine Hat, who has been covering the border protests in Alberta. Next up, media coverage of cattle in the environment has shifted towards the negative, highly negative.
In the last year, headlines have said that cattle are the new coal and that cows are destroying the world's wildlife. Kim Stanford, a University of Lethbridge scientist, wants to provide a more balanced picture of cattle through a podcast called Cows on the Planet. I spoke with Kim from her office in Lethbridge.
Hey, Kim, thanks for coming on Between the Rows. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, Robert.
So let's talk about Cows on the Planet podcast. Can you explain sort of how this came about and why you're part of this podcast?
Well, it came about because the group that's involved in producing the podcast, which is me, Tim McAllister of Agriculture Canada, and Kim Ominski from the University of Manitoba, we'd all been noticing that there was some pretty, one-sided information appearing about cattle and beef in the media, and we wanted to instead, you know, we want to present the good, the bad, but a balanced perspective, so that it's like useful information for people that might have some questions about where their food is coming from.
So what were some of the stories or coverage that you found quite concerning? Was it the story about comparing, I guess, cows are the new coal, or what really stood out for you as being unbalanced?
We one of our first episodes was actually about greenhouse gases produced by cattle compared to other sources, and it's all about how it's weighted. So yes, cattle do produce methane, but they do not produce more greenhouse gases than all transportation and other food production and everything all combined. Like you see things in the media that are giving like quite ridiculous numbers for some stuff. A podcast that we're just going to record today is about how much cattle are contributing to deforestation in the Amazon. And if you look on some sources, you'll find, okay, cattle are like, they're the main drivers. They're the ones, it's grazing cattle that's leading to deforestation of the Amazon. But we're going to be talking to a scientist from Brazil that spent the last 15 years or more studying all the different causes of deforestation in the Amazon. And you know, we know that cattle are involved, but it's not, you know, it's not that simple. Usually it's, there's quite a bit of oversimplification and put the blame on cattle when it may not totally be justified, although they're definitely contributors.
So can you just tell me about some of the other topics that you've covered so far? And I guess second question, are you mostly speaking with fellow scientists?
We have spoke to a number of scientists, but it's anyone who's an expert in their field. So they're not all scientists. We've a recent podcast was the relationship between cows and fish. Can you graze cattle and not damage fish populations in surrounding wetlands? And so that's our most recently released podcast. Another couple of recent ones, one on should we be eating meat that's grown in a lab? That was an eye-opener for me, because I'm not an expert in lab-grown meat, and the researcher who was had more concerns than I'd even thought about, that things that have to be some scientific questions that have to be solved before it becomes at all commercially viable, which is different from what is being presented by companies that are trying to get basically venture capital funding to produce lab-grown meat. So you're just hearing really fantastic stuff when it's not quite that easy.
So again, getting back to the motivation, just to be clear on this, you know, it's difficult for a scientist to be in a position where you're kind of like defending the status quo or defending the industry. That's not what this is about.
No, we don't want, it's not just a good news story that cattle are just nothing but wonderful and eat more beef and everything will be rosy. No, we want to present both sides of the story. Like in many ways, it seems like the really negative aspect of cattle and beef production, that's what is being largely taken up by the media. So we want to look into some, we're picking contentious issues and trying to give both sides of the story so that there's better information for people to make their own decisions.
Okay. And so who would you describe as your target audience for this podcast? Who are you trying to reach?
Anyone, just the Canadians. We're targeting Canadians, but Canadian adults. How's that for not so targeted?
Okay.
Targeted audience.
Pretty broad target. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. No. We're not. We're trying to make it, and we try not to have it too like heavy. It's not. Try to make it so that it's understand that anyone can understand it, and then try to throw in a little bit of humor too to keep it a bit light and try to be a bit entertaining. Can't try too hard or that doesn't work either. But
okay,
yeah, try to just keep it light.
So you started doing this, I think, in the summer of 2021. So have you had any kind of response yet from fellow scientists or Canadians? What have you heard back?
Well, we haven't had a lot of feedback, to tell you the truth. We've had a little bit. We've had some people saying that they liked individual episodes. We've had a few naysayers saying that our, you know, this is all just really biased, la 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 la. So there's different factions, I guess, come out. Our most negative responses were when we interviewed someone from the in the U.S. who was talking about grazing on public land. So he and there's a group of anti, like, there should be no livestock on public lands group, and we kind of ran into that without even knowing that was even going to happen. So
okay, last question here. So bigger picture, this, I'm not sure I would call it negative media coverage or a lot of journalists sort of like really questioning or maybe even condemning cattle production. This has happened over the last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years. This is not new. You know, this is going to take quite a bit of effort and information to kind of get a more balanced perspective out there. I mean, your podcast is just a small part of that.
Yeah,
do you feel hopeful that it is possible to get more of a balanced story out there about raising cattle and beef production?
Well, I think as a scientist, you've got to try. You can't just sit back and let some of this really. Like, you listen to it and you think, oh, holy crap, doodles, while you're sitting there eating your breakfast, and you know that there's another side of the story, or sometimes it's partly factual, and it sounds really, you know, it sounds really good, and then it kind of goes down another garden path that's making some assumptions that maybe they just don't know, like they don't know some of the aspects about cattle production, or making assumptions that are incorrect and kind of running with that.
Okay. So to paraphrase, you kind of feel this is your responsibility as a scientist to kind of be part of the conversation.
Yeah. And I'm an old beat up scientist, so I'm pretty close to retirement. I've been around the block a few times. So got lots of experience and, you know, involved in a lot of different aspects of of research on beef cattle and my collaborators as well. So we've got lots of years of experience behind this. So let's try to use it to give some better scientific information.
Absolute last one. How long do you plan to continue the Cows on the Planet podcast? Is this like a multi-year project, or what's the objective here?
Yeah, we're going to have a commitment to make 36 podcasts. And then after that, I don't know, there's only probably so many. We're going to try to tackle all of the issues that we can really see that are important. And after that, I don't know, maybe that's enough cattle specific podcasts. No, but the future is still kind of undecided, but definitely we've got finish out this year with podcast production, and then I guess we see.
Okay. All right, Kim, I've been speaking with Kim Stanford, a University of Lethbridge scientist and one of the hosts of the Cows on the Planet podcast. Thanks, Kim.
Yeah, well, good talking to you.
Thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Well, that's it for this week's show. But before I go, Glacier Farm Media and partner organizations are hosting a series of cybersecurity webinars. The next one is on February 17th. There, you can hear about some of the benefits and some of the risks of the latest food production technologies. For more information, please go to the Western Producer website at producer.com. There is a link at the top of the page to register for the webinar. I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer. Thanks for listening.
You know, not all nitrogen works as hard as I do. My ESN polymer coating means I can stay out in the field longer, up to 80 days. Those other guys? First hot wind or heavy rain and they're out. They're scared of soil bacteria and standing water too. But not me. It's why ESN is the leading controlled-release nitrogen in broadacre agriculture. See for yourself. Just check out smartnitrogen.com.